This is Oklahoma Perspective. The Tulsa International Airport has a new CEO. Former Public Information Officer Alexis Higgins has the job now, and KRMG's Russell Mills talked with her about what's going on at the airport.
We have seen in recent years, because the ding, if there is one, against Tulsa International has always been, you can't fly directly to anywhere. Like,
right.
If you wanted to fly from here to Oklahoma City, they probably would route you through Dallas. Just, you know, how it was. But you've really made strides in that direction. And I think I recently saw, isn't America adding direct to LAX? That's kind of huge.
Right. So you can fly today to 18 nonstop destinations from Tulsa International. We are adding American's LA service on April 2nd. We have Destin coming on board this summer. So we're constantly out there looking at our top destinations, looking for those gaps, and then trying to work with the community to identify the future demand so that we can find an airline partner who will invest their aircraft and their crew time here in our market. And so we've made strides. I think the biggest challenge we have is just making sure people understand where can you fly to from Tulsa International and looking beyond their regular airline. So they may have a favorite airline that flies to maybe three or four different hubs. We have six airlines here at Tulsa International, and if you look at all of them, the opportunities for that point-to-point service grow tremendously.
Are there other airlines that are sort of courting TIA or vice versa, or is that, you know?
Yeah, well, we always are out there talking with airlines. There are probably three or four that we are really targeting that aren't here today. And some of those have to do with service to our top five destinations. And it's really the mix of service. We have the legacy carriers here today, but where we've really seen our growth these past couple of years are with these low-cost carriers like Allegiant and Frontier. And there are several carriers in that category that have potential for meeting the needs of our travelers with service to, let's say, Florida. And so that's something we're always keeping our eyes open for.
So what are the top five destinations? Did you rattle them off? Did I sleep through that?
No. So
oh,
the top five. So we have LA was number one,
yeah.
But because that's starting, we took that one off the list. So New York City. So we're talking LaGuardia or Newark as our target airport. Washington, D.C. and DCA is the preferred airport. However, there's Dulles and BWI isn't too far away. Seattle is a number three, and with our aviation component and aerospace, that would be a great connection for Tulsa. San Francisco is number four, and Philadelphia is number five.
Interesting. So Billings, Montana did not make the list.
No, I'm kidding. Nope.
I'm from Montana.
It'd be interesting to see how many people a day are going there. I bet I could pull up the list.
You probably could. Actually, I'm from Bozeman, so I don't know why Billings came out of my mouth, but oh
okay.
Well.
Yeah.
So challenge-wise, anything that does keep you awake at night? I mean, it seems like TIA runs pretty smoothly. I rarely go out there and have to stand in lines, you know, for much of anything. It seems like things go well, but you do have pretty decent passenger numbers.
Yeah.
So
I definitely think customer service is kind of the foundation of everything we do, and that's really a strong suit for us. We have a great team that's really focused on that. We're looking at how can we develop our property. I think that's one of our key focus areas for this year and the coming years. And I think the other key piece of that are resources. How can we find and locate additional resources for infrastructure development? So if we have airfield projects at Riverside Airport or here at Tulsa International, how can we go beyond just the federal funding that's available to look for additional resources that would help, extend or lengthen a runway or provide additional payment for airplanes to land and take off? And what are the future needs of the airport, and how can we make sure we're prepared for those? I think that's probably the biggest issue that I think about most often when I'm trying to go to sleep at night. But all in all, Tulsa's a great airport. We have great people running it every day, and that's the experience that our customers have shared with us. That's why they like flying to and from Tulsa, because it's so easy and well-maintained. And I just look forward to continuing that tradition.
Did you say like property development? Like, does the airport own land that's just kind of
Go ahead. The airport sits on over 4,900 acres. So we're equivalent to size and land size to Atlanta's airport or Austin's airport. And those are both, you know, much bigger operations than we are. So how can we utilize this asset that's sitting out there to add additional revenue for the airport and support the economic activities of the community? And what we're doing is really targeting development opportunities along Mingo and 169 on land that the airport owns that we'll be able to lease, that maybe will support American Airlines or support Spirit Air Systems in their business, helps them, helps us, and helps the community. That's what we're going for.
Interesting. All right. I would be very bad at my job if I didn't at least take a swing at the 737 MAX 8 question. Don't know if you've got a position on that one way or another or how much that affects operations here in Tulsa. I believe that those planes land here now and then. There aren't that many of them in the U.S.
In Tulsa, there aren't many in the flight. There aren't any, actually, in the flight schedules for the current Tulsa schedule. And with American, Southwest, United has MAX 9s, none of United's flights were ever in the schedule. So it doesn't impact us directly. However, it impacts our customers and the way they travel. If they had a particular flight on a connecting flight that would end up on a MAX 8, just depending on how the airlines are able to reallocate those resources to meet demand, that's something that they're continuing to look at every single day, especially during these peak spring break travel periods. And so while we haven't seen it, you know, seen a direct impact, we definitely know our customers have, and so we're hoping, and we're right beside the airlines and hoping that they can find a resolution, you know, that ultimately results in that airplane being able to fly again. And until then, we're just supporting our airlines as best we can and getting information to their customers, our mutual customers, about planning ahead and knowing what their options are if they should encounter some delay.
And, you know, I guess some people would understandably be nervous about getting on one of those. But so just to make sure I totally understand, they're really not flown in and out of Tulsa, but folks who connect in other airports often, you know, may start or end in Tulsa, but may connect and have been assigned on one of those planes before they were grounded.
They were grounded, right. Okay. So there were none in the flight schedule prior to the grounding.
Gotcha.
And so it was very rare for us to see a MAX 8 in Tulsa. The only time we would ever see one is if there was a substitution in a flight schedule. But, you know, now that they've been grounded, I think, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Even when they were flying, you've heard this before, I'm sure, but air travel is the safest mode of transportation. And we think about the hundreds of thousands of people who travel every single day versus the, you know, getting in your car and driving on a highway. I think we just need to remind people that there is no safer form of transportation than getting on an airplane and getting to your destination.
Yeah, you're statistically way more likely to die in your bathroom than on an airplane.
Right. Getting hit by lightning, right?
Exactly. But and yet, if whenever a like a little, you know, single engine plane, you know, clips a power pole in Ohio, it makes the news. And I've never really understood that because there's so many planes. Maybe that's why, because it's rare. I guess that's good.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we've gotten better over time, right? You know, if you just look at the history over the past decade or even two decades, it is just the safest form of transportation there is.
New CEO of Tulsa International Airport, Alexis Higgins. Regarding travel, it's a new year and people are making vacation plans. KRMG's Russell Mills spoke with travel guru Chris McGinnis about ways to make it less expensive this year.
All right, so we're actually here to talk about leaving home. And
that's right.
Travel's a thing that we all, well, not all like to do, but most of us like to do, or at least we like the getting there part and the enjoying the being away from home part. It's the actual traveling part that can be a little tricky. And one of the obvious impediments to travel is the cost.
Yep.
And my understanding is you are sort of a guru on how figuring out the best times of year to travel, you know, ways to save money. So why don't we start with, is this a good time of year to book?
Yeah, well, it's the time of year that you need to start kind of mapping out your travel strategy for the year. And if you're planning on saving money this year, you really need to use peaks and valleys in demand in order to extract the most savings. January and February is the slowest time in the travel industry, and when travel demand goes down, so do prices. So if you can drop everything and take a trip in January and February, you're going to save quite a lot of money. The next on the horizon is spring break. Spring break usually mimics what we saw during the holidays, and this was a very, very busy holiday travel season, if you remember. If you want to save the most money on spring travel, though, you have to travel during the period after Easter, which is on April 21st this year, up to Memorial Day, May 25th. This in the travel industry is known as the shoulder season, and it's kind of a magical time when travel demand dips, and so do prices, but the weather is still good, and the big crowds really haven't arrived yet. So if you've had your eyes on a European vacation, that travel window is the perfect time to go.
Between Easter and Memorial Day. So
that's right.
From the Monday after Easter until the Sunday before Memorial Day, that's the, what did you call it, the shoulder?
It's called the shoulder season in the travel industry. There's another shoulder season on the back end, on the fall side of the year, and that starts on September 15th and goes until November 15th. And that is that's the best time of year to get a really good deal on a cruise.
So that's kind of between, what, Labor Day and Thanksgiving?
That's right, exactly.
Interesting. All right, so does it matter especially what areas of the country you want to go to? I'm thinking for spring break, for example, if I wanted to fly to Florida, I'm probably going to have to pay the freight because it's so many people go there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, there are some windows that you can travel around spring break that, you know, you may not have to pay full freight. And if you can go in early March this year, before things really kick in mid-March, you're going to find a deal. And then again, after Easter is a good time to go. Another really good way to save money, though, is to take a look at what kind of travel credit card you're carrying. Currently, the Barclaycard Arrivals Plus card is offering a 70,000-mile bonus if you spend $5,000 in the first 3 months. Now, the good thing about that 70,000-mile bonus, which is the biggest one I've ever seen them offer, is that that translates into a $700 discount off of your summer or spring vacation. Those points, you earn 2x points with this card, and those points can be used for statement credits for things like cruises or airfare or rental car expenses. So take a look at the credit card you're carrying. You can save quite a lot of money that way.
You know, I will tell you, when I travel, it's generally for business, if I'm going to get on an airplane or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't have any cards that give me miles or points. I've never really understood. How does all that stuff work?
Well, I mean, it just depends on the type of traveler that you are. If you're not a frequent traveler, it probably doesn't pay to have a card that's going to offer you a whole lot of airline points on a specific airline. And that's the beauty of this Barclaycard Arrivals Plus card we're talking about. It doesn't have anything to do with airline miles. You're earning these points that can be used for dollars off your summer vacation. So that it's the kind of card that would be perfect for a non-frequent traveler.
Interesting. Well, I'm definitely that. I'm a non-frequent traveler.
Well, we got to get you on the road. Come on. There's the whole world to see out there.
I know. Well, I did get to, about a year ago, I did get to go to Pakistan for about 2 weeks, so that was cool.
That's interesting.
But the U.S. State Department, I think, picked up the tab on that one. So thanks, taxpayers. Much appreciated.
Yeah.
And I don't know who got those airline miles, but, again, it wasn't me. So if you do that, if you do rack up points or miles, I've heard some people say, yeah, I've got all these miles and I don't know what to do with them. What can you do with them, or how should they be used?
Yeah, well, again, you know, using points and miles is sort of like buying airline tickets. You have to play to the peaks and valleys of demand. So if you wanted to fly to Hawaii in the summer using airline points, you're probably not going to be able to do that. Or if you can, you're going to overspend on the number of points. But if you can travel to Hawaii in April or in October, then you're likely going to find a very good deal using your points. it just depends. I mean, the airlines treat miles like they treat money now, and it's going to take you a lot more points to travel during a peak season versus a slower off season.
All right, so let's get back to trying to save money by booking ahead of time.
Yeah.
Are there some protections, like if I go ahead and buy tickets to Florida in between? So I know I want to fly in between Easter and Memorial Day, so I've got that figured out.
Yeah.
And then I want to buy those tickets. Am I, you know, just putting that money out there and basically locking myself into that trip, or are there some tickets you can buy where you could get, you know, let them go if you decided that you had changed your mind or something else happened?
Well, the airline that has the best rules in terms of making changes is Southwest Airlines. They don't charge fees for you to make changes. You have to pay if there's any difference in fare, but they don't penalize you with like a $200 fee like a lot of the major airlines do. But once you do buy that ticket, you do have to use it, and especially if you're buying a very low cost ticket, that's part of the trade off. You get if you buy a low cost ticket, there are a lot of restrictions around that, and in most cases, they're non-refundable and non-changeable.
So, and that brings up another interesting point. It can make a huge difference, in my experience, which airline you fly on as far as price. And some of them have a lot of fees, like if you buy the super low fare, well, then you may pay to check a bag, and you may pay to have a aisle seat, and, you know, they add a lot of charges on there.
Yeah, but that's true. Yeah, and that's something that you do need to take into consideration when you're making your reservations is what those fees are and what's important to you. You know, if you're taking an easy trip, maybe from Tulsa to Houston or Dallas or even Phoenix, you know, it doesn't really matter where you sit on the plane. It's going to be a pretty short ride. You don't have to worry about it. So you don't have to worry about paying that fee. But I'm in San Francisco, and if I wanted to fly to New York, for example, that's a six-hour trip, so I'm willing to pay an extra $30 to $80 to be able to pick my seat and get an aisle or a window for that trip. So it just depends on your trip and, you know, how much money you want to spend. You know, what if you have enough money to buy a little bit more comfort, I definitely suggest you do so because you're going to have a better trip and you're going to arrive a little bit fresher.
All right, one more question for you real quick. Is it best to bundle, you know, hotel, car, all that along with my airline ticket? Is that usually a good deal, or should I maybe go with the a la carte method?
It's a good question. It depends on the type of traveler that you are. I think that it's a good idea to bundle or, you know, consider all-inclusive type vacations if you're family that's going on spring break. You want to know ahead of time how much everything is going to cost. That's something that you need to take into consideration. Another thing, you know, you just need to compare the costs. So you see how much it costs if you bundle like you do on a big website like, you know, Expedia and Travelocity, and the big sites encourage you to bundle your air and your hotel and your rental car. And so you can see what kind of fare you're going to get there, and then you know, try to do it on your own and see if you truly do make any savings. You know, one thing that that I'd like you to do, if possible, is check out my website at sfgate.com and click on the travel tab. You'll find a lot of my good travel advice there. And if you're interested in the Barclaycard Arrival Plus card that I was talking about, go to barclaysus.com.
All right, sfgate.com and barclaysus.com. Chris McGinnis, thank you very much for your time. We do appreciate it.
All right, enjoyed it. Thank you.
Safe travels.
Chris McGinnis with the San Francisco Chronicle. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.